This is Wayne Dyer, and I'm here to talk to you for the next 90 minutes or so about a book that I wrote back in the 1970s, in 1975, in fact. It was first published in 1976. It's called Your Erroneous Zones. A lot of people mistook that title. They took it home in brown paper bags all across America, thinking they were getting a sex book, but it is nothing like that. These are far more ticklish zones than those. This is a book that skyrocketed to the top of the bestseller list and stayed there for a couple of years. It is a book that turned my life around in many, many ways, many, many positive ways. At the time, I was teaching at a university, at St. John's University in New York, when I wrote this book. I subsequently left that position and have written many books since that time, and also have produced a lot of audio tapes and have become a lecturer, and many, many changes have taken place. So many, many years after the publication of this book, I've been asked to do a audio tape about Your Erroneous Zones. It's an exciting prospect for me to go back into this book that has been so impactful in my life and in the lives of estimated around the world, some 30 million copies of this book have been sold in all of the different foreign editions in the United States also. And the way to take a look at this book and look at the concepts that I was writing about back then is to understand the concept of what erroneous zones means. Your erroneous zones is the key word in there is erroneous, and the word erroneous means error. And this is a book about the errors that people make in their lives as they go through their life and try to manage their own emotions. I think I've had more comments to me since this book was published about the one thing that seemed to be the most important to them as they read this book was that they learned that they had control over their own emotions. In writing this book and sitting down to write Erroneous Zones and talking about these concepts today, I think the most important thing that you can get out of this is to understand that you are a choice-making individual and that all of the conditions that you find yourself in your life, all of the circumstances of your life, all of the emotional reactions that you have to all of the people and all of the things and events and so on that take place in your life are really choices. And that's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to get because they're raised to believe that I can't help the way I feel. I have a right to be miserable when somebody treats me in a certain way. I can't help it. I've always been that way. It's just my nature. It's just the kind of person that I am. People use things like it's I'm Italian or I'm from New York or grew up in a family that always talked to each other like this, and I can't help myself. And these are the kinds of things that I really wanted to attack and eradicate from your thinking. That is that you can't help the way that you are. You indeed are the product of all of the choices that you've made up until this moment. And if you do not like what your life is about, I'm always reminded of James Allen in As a Man Thinketh. He said that circumstances do not make a man. They reveal him. And the circumstances of your life truly reveal what kinds of choices that you have made up until now. Which means that in order to rid yourself of erroneous zones or get past the negativity and the doubt and the judgment and the kinds of emotional reactions that get in your way, you have to put responsibility first and foremost on yourself. You have to rid yourself of the inclination to blame other people for what is wrong with you, to blame your circumstances, to look backwards in your life and look at your family and come up with all kinds of real nice explanations, but they really don't help you to get past these kinds of emotional reactions. So the way I want to go through this on the tape is to wind my way through what I think of as the erroneous zones. The first major erroneous zones is what I call self-doubt. Again, erroneous meaning error, the ways that you process your life. You have one life to live. You have two parts to that life. One part of that life is your physiology, the physical body that you've shown up in, that you find yourself trapped in, that you can never escape while you're here. And you take it with you wherever you go. You can't leave the office in the morning and go home with a different body. You carry it around with you everywhere you go. And then there's the invisible part of you, the part of you that processes everything that you experience in your life. This is your mind, your consciousness, or your soul, or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter what you label it. It's just understanding that that how you process and perceive yourself is determined not by what other people tell you, as much as you'd like to believe that, but in fact by how you have chosen to process yourself. And what you want to learn how to do right off the bat, at the very beginning, is to understand that disliking yourself or experiencing self-rejection or putting yourself down or finding fault with yourself or looking at your body and telling yourself all the things about it that you don't like. Like you may be too tall, you might tell yourself that you're too short, you might tell yourself that you're too heavy, that you're too light, that you're any number of things, and you can go through every organ in your body. And some people do this very thing and find all kinds of reasons why they don't like this, they don't like that, they don't like the size of their legs, they don't like the size of their breasts, they don't like the way their hair is, they don't like their eyes, they don't like their ears, their nose is too big. It's an endless. And this is like a burden that you place on yourself in your life. And it's something that you want to really begin to process in a different way. And a way to process it is to say, what do I get out of this? What's the point in me disliking myself or finding fault with myself? It's the only self I have. Instead of doing that and keeping myself miserable, what I'm going to do is look in the mirror and say to myself, this is the body that I have shown up in for whatever reason, whether it was my plan, whether it was God's plan, whether it was my parents' plan, whether it was a conspiracy, whatever, it is still the reality. And I am going to accept the reality of what I have shown up in and see it as my curriculum to a higher place. The body that you're in, whether it's in a wheelchair, whether it's blind, whether it's deaf, whether it's tall, whether it's short or black, white, whatever it may be, it is still your curriculum. It's what you have to use to get to the highest place that you want to be in your life. So rejecting it is really rejecting your entire life curriculum. And you have to really look at the whole idea of, in our culture, it's almost, I think I have been asked the question on talk shows across America more about this particular subject than anything else. And the question is, isn't it selfish? Aren't you promoting selfishness? Aren't you telling people that they should love themselves and reject all other people and so on? And I'd like to put that to rest right here. The first thing you have to ask yourself is, what does it mean to be selfish? To be selfish is to be a burden to another human being. Whenever you find yourself a burden to somebody else or someone else is a burden to you, that is a very selfish act. The person who dislikes himself, believe it or not, is the biggest burden to be around in the world. This is someone who is never happy, doesn't know how to make themselves happy, is using other people to try to get them to be happy, is always blaming other people for the conditions of their life. The person who has self-doubt or self-rejection doesn't know how to enjoy their life. And being around a person who doesn't enjoy their life is burdensome. The person who does love themselves, who feels good about themselves, who, if you ask the question, do you love yourself, there's not even an issue there. There's not even a question involved. It's simply, of course I do. This is me. This is all I have. Of course I love myself. Why wouldn't I? Why would I ever put myself down? It has nothing to do with being conceited or finding fault with other people or making yourself better than anybody else. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the simple notion that in order for me to be happy, I have to love myself. In order to be able to be free from being a burden to somebody else, I have to know how to enjoy my life. If I know how to enjoy my life, it means that I am loving the life that I'm having, and that means I'm loving the body that I'm in. I'm loving the self that I am. And therefore, you will not be a burden to anybody else. The person who loves themselves is never a burden to anyone else unless it's conceit. And conceit is just another form of trying to get other people to pay more attention to you. But if it's just authentic self-acceptance, then it is the most important thing that you can do. And in raising children, nothing is more important in the whole educational environment than self-concept, self-esteem. This is what we're trying to teach all the time to young people, is feel good about yourself. Treat yourself, cherish yourself as a valuable, important, significant grand, divine creature, as someone who is unique and special in all the world. And feel that way about yourself wherever you go and carry yourself that way. Because the minute that you start practicing self-rejection, and self-rejection shows its ugly head in a lot of ways, you can reject compliments that are directed at you. This old thing, I'm really not very smart. I'm just real lucky, I guess. I mean, it's that whole kind of condescending, always putting yourself down. Someone says, gee, you look really nice today. No, I don't really look nice. This is just a facade. This isn't the real me. You can make up excuses for why you look nice. It's my hairdresser. She does it for me. Or it's the wardrobe. Or it's the color that I'm wearing. It isn't really me. You can give credit to other people all the time and not take credit for yourself. Whenever somebody says something to you, you can experience self-rejection by saying things like, well, my husband feels this way, or my mother always said. In other words, putting the emphasis for your life on other people and other events and other things in your life. You can always be verifying your opinions for other people. Like if someone says something to you, your response can be, well, isn't that right, George? George, tell him that this is what I mean. That's a form of self-rejection. You might be in a restaurant and refuse to order something that you want because you don't think that you're worth it. So you look for the cheapest thing on the menu. A very typical kind of self-rejecting kind of attitude. You cannot buy yourself something, even though you might have the money, because you don't think that you're worth it. I've seen many times on airplanes where someone will refuse to have a little glass of wine with their meal because they don't feel that they should spend $3 on themselves. So they put themselves and they put the $3 away and don't feel that they are important enough to have that. You can avoid indulgences and doing nice things for yourself, not because of finances here, but because you just don't feel that it's worth it. You certainly shouldn't have flowers around. I mean, you're not important enough to have flowers. Other people get flowers, but certainly not you. Anyway, these kinds of self-rejection attitudes start out very young in your life, and in fact, you may have been carrying them around for an entire lifetime. It isn't to say that that they didn't happen to you and haven't been going on in your life since you were a little boy or a little girl, but the fact is that you have to still understand that life is a choice, and that if you want to improve your self-esteem and you want to improve your life, it starts with saying to yourself, I have been buying into this all of my life. As a little boy or a little girl, it wasn't my mother who did it to me. I believed it. I bought into it. They tried to convince me that I wasn't that important, and I accepted it. And now I'm an adult, and I am still buying into it. I'm still accepting it, and I'm still carrying over all of this leftover baggage from perhaps other people making this effort. So you have to say to yourself, they didn't do it to me. I allowed it to happen, and I am no longer willing to allow myself to be immobilized by the rejection that other people or other events or other institutions or whatever it may be may have attempted to impose on me. So what you want to do at this point is if you can see that there are areas of your life in which you are self-rejecting and identify them, and make a commitment to changing them, then you can come up with some specific things that you can do about them. And some of those specifics, those strategies, those techniques that you can use to rid yourself of this self-rejection are really quite simple. I mean, you can begin to discipline yourself to select new responses to others' attempts at making you feel... at making you feel good. When someone says to you, gee, you look really nice today, you can practice, instead of that immediate self-rejecting kind of, oh, it really isn't me, or this is my hairdresser, or whatever, you can just a very simple thank you, or it's nice to know that that you appreciate me, just even if you don't mean it. I mean, just sometimes you have to fake it, but faking it is all right, as long as you are practicing a kind of, hey, if someone says to me I look nice, or that I smell good, or that I look nice in this outfit, or that I look younger than I am, or whatever, I'm entitled to that. I'm entitled to a compliment. I'm worth that. You can practice saying things like, I love you, and And check out when someone says that back to you. How do you react to that? What is your reaction to that? And accept the I love yous and the caresses and the affection that other people are directing at you as something that is directed towards someone who deserves that, rather than always doubting it and saying, oh, I wonder if he really does that, or I wonder if she really means it, or if, and all of the doubting kind of things. Of course you would love me. Your attitude, your inner conversation goes, of course you would love me. I'm worth being loved. I'm a valuable person. You can practice ordering things that you want in a restaurant. I mean, just for practice. Instead of looking at the price tag, ask yourself, what do I feel like having? And give yourself little rewards. Little rewards are things that that you can practice. And the practice gives you a kind of self-discipline of self-acceptance and self-esteem and value. You indulge yourself with something that's really nice just for you. No one else has to know about it. Why? Because you're worth it. Because you're important. Because you're significant. You've got to look at things like jealousy. Jealousy is really a put-down of yourself, making another person's opinion of you more important than your opinion of yourself. You want to really watch out for that. If you find yourself extremely jealous of somebody else, you can ask yourself, what does this say about myself? As a matter of fact, you can take every single erroneous zone or every single negative behavior in your life and ask the question, when I'm experiencing this emotionally, what does this say about how I feel about myself? Why would I allow myself to go through this kind of agony, this kind of hurt, this kind of pain, and bring it home to I am no longer going to treat myself as a shabby person who isn't entitled to feel good or to feel positive about himself. I'm not going to do that any longer. And when I'm experiencing anger or guilt or worry or fear or any of the kinds of things that I call erroneous zones, you start with, why am I allowing myself to be in this state of immobilization? Don't I think I'm valuable enough to be beyond that? You are entitled to be happy. You are deserving of happiness. And there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. It is a way of living. The next erroneous zone that I want to talk about briefly is something that comes right after self-doubt as the most significant and painful of the emotional immobilizations that come from the way we process our life. Approval seeking. Looking for your value in the approval of others. Making other people's opinions more important than your own opinion of yourself, which is exactly what you do every single time you find yourself upset, immobilized, depressed, out of sorts, even unhappy with the way someone else has treated you or behaved towards you. And if you are experiencing an inner kind of discontent as a result of what somebody else has said or done, what you're really saying in that moment is, what that person thinks of me is more important than what I think of myself. And that's the big shift that you want to make. You want to be able to say to yourself, they have an opinion, and their opinion is something that they're very much entitled to. Even their opinion about me is something that they're entitled to. But it doesn't say who I am, and it doesn't validate who I am. Who I am is how I choose to process my life. And if there are certain people in it who do not like what I'm doing, or who find fault with what I'm doing, or who disagree with what I'm doing, or are really even unhappy with what I'm doing, that is normal and in the way of things. One of the great things that you learn when you are involved in political elections is that a landslide, like in the 1972 election, I believe it was George McGovern against Nixon, and it was considered the greatest political landslide in American history. And a lot of people don't realize that about 47% of the people in this country voted for George McGovern for president. In politics, if you get half of the people plus 3% on your side, you got a landslide. So why would you expect everyone that's out there in the world to agree with and understand and behave in ways towards you that are commensurate with what you believe about yourself? If you get half the people, plus a couple, in any given day to agree with you and to like you and to approve of you, you've got a landslide going. You're doing terrific. So when you start learning how to eradicate this approval-seeking disease, the first thing that you do is say that I do not expect people to approve of me. I do not expect them to agree with me. Now, you've been raised on approval-seeking. You've been raised by going through your schools to please the teacher. Your parents very early taught you that getting my approval is more important than anything else. Do what you are told. And yet one of the things we've learned is that children who are raised on blind obedience have more higher degrees of prejudice and an inability to make decisions for themselves than any other group. It's obvious if someone is just told what to think and how to think and what to do and where to go and what their values are and are never allowed to think for themselves, then they will prejudge everyone that they're told to prejudge. They'll hate who they're told to hate, and making decisions will be something that'll be impossible for them to do. They're the kind of people who go around, and when they are at a restaurant and they say, someone will say to them, well, what kind of food do you like? Oh, I like Italian. And someone sitting next to them say, Italian, ugh, I hate it. Well, I don't mean I really like Italian. I mean, I like Chinese. Chinese, you like that? It's like bait. I don't really like the Chinese food. I really prefer, and it's like their opinion isn't located within themselves. Their opinion is located in whatever anybody around them is saying. Very much like politicians, who are constantly trying to get the approval of everybody for everything that they say. And if they're talking to a group over here who are pro-guns or whatever, or pro-abortion, whatever, then they will come out and say exactly what they think the audience wants them to hear. And then the next day, they'll say something else to a different audience. Now, that's one thing in politics, but your life isn't politics. Your life is very personal, and that's what we're talking about here. You do not want to be the kind of person who is always looking at what somebody else is going to say or how they're going to react in order for you to be happy. As a school counselor and a therapist for years and as a teacher, I used to tell my students who would say to me, okay, I agree with you, but I still want their approval. I would always say to them, look, I want approval too. I mean, I go out in front of an audience, and when I finish, they give me a standing ovation. I'm really happy. That makes me feel very, very good. I love approval. I want approval. I enjoy approval. But I don't need approval. A need is something that you can't survive without. I need oxygen. I will admit to that. And I need sleep, and I need to be held and loved, and I need, there's a whole lot of needs that I have. Most of them are in the physiological area, and many of them are in the psychological as well. But approval is not one of them. If you need approval, what that means is that you become immobilized without it. Like if someone in this room suddenly started taking the oxygen out of this room, I would become immobilized and die. That's a need. If someone takes the approval out of your life and you begin to wither, then you have got your self-esteem located in the wrong place. Self-esteem means self, located in the self, not located in others. Otherwise, we'd call it others' esteem or something like that. Now, you need to take a look at the people who get the most approval. Because I used to tell my students this, I'd give them this little talk about approval seeking and that you don't want to allow other people's opinions to be more important than yourself. And you shouldn't be surprised at all when you run into disapproval. I'm never surprised at it. It's really interesting because that's a maturity that I think I've experienced over the years. I used to get letters from people, and if it was a negative letter, it would bother me, and I would think about it, and I would respond to it, and I would try to defend myself. And if I got a bad review of all the books, I've written many, many books and produced a lot of things, and I've spoken on a lot of places, and sometimes the review is great. As a matter of fact, when one of my books came out, I was in San Francisco, and the editor there took it apart and just tore it apart, did a whole half a page on how terrible this book was the same day in Cincinnati, in the Inquirer, on the opposite side of the country, was a review saying what a terrific, great book this was. And you know, which one am I going to respond to? Which one do I choose? When someone sends me a really negative letter about something that I've done, I usually send them back three or four positive letters, and then I'll send them theirs. I'll say, now, if you were me, which one would you pay attention to? And what I've learned is that I've gotten to a point now where the negativity is just something that I expect. I'm not at all surprised by it. I know when I speak to an audience of several thousand people that there's going to be some who are not going to agree with and like what I'm saying, very much like what I'm saying right here in this tape right now. There will be people who will listen to this and they will find fault with it, and that's fine. And what I tell them is go out and produce your own tape and go out and market it and sell it and see how you do with it. That's fine. There's room. This is a free world, and you've got the opportunity to do that very thing. What I don't do any longer with even the negative reviews is get myself immobilized or depressed by it. I accept that I am going to run into disapproval on a regular part of my life. And I've accepted that the people who love me the most are going to give me the most disapproval. Your parents, your brothers and sisters, your husband, your wife, your siblings, which is the same as your brothers and sisters, isn't it? your co-worker, people who care about you are going to sometimes disapprove and sometimes they're not going to disapprove. My wife and I don't agree on about 50% of the things that we do in our lives. She has a certain way of running things. I have a certain way of running things. But I don't let her disapproval immobilize me, and she doesn't let my disapproval immobilize her. We've gotten to the point where we understand that we are different, that she's unique and that I'm unique, and that we're entitled to that. And instead of making that a place of contention, we've gotten to a point in our lives where conflict and confrontation are not things that we want for ourselves any longer, that we don't want to have that experience on a regular basis of always being upset and angry and hurt over all of the kinds of little things that tend to really ruin relationships. So rather than have that conflict and that confrontation and that pain and the anguish and all of that that goes with that, what you do is you shift that and you say, you know, you don't agree with me and I understand that. And that's fine. And if I don't need to have her agree with me, if I don't need her approval, if I want it but I don't get it, that's fine. But if I need it and don't get it, then I'm going to get angry and I'm going to blow up and I'm going to have this problem. So it's like I instead of expecting approval for everything that I say and do everywhere in the world, including with my children and with my brothers and sisters and all of the people in my life, instead of that, I expect some disapproval. As a matter of fact, I expect it about half of the time. And when I get it, I'm not surprised. And when I'm not surprised, I don't get myself worked up. When I don't get worked up, I have become emotionally mature then. I have been able to handle the kinds of things that come my way in the area of disapproval. And you're going to run into it a lot in your life. And one of the things that you might do is tell yourself over and over and over again, well, I've always been this way. I grew up on needing approval, and as a little boy or a little girl, I was always this way, and I'm still that way today. And that's something you want to eradicate from your life and begin to see, and understand that this is not something that is imposed upon you. It is not natural. It's not human nature to be an approval seeker. It is not only human. It is only neurotic to be doing that. And you have the choice always, I will say over and over and over again as you listen to this tape. You have the choice. When someone says something to you that you dislike, when someone behaves in a way towards you that you find offensive, you have the choice in how you're going to process that. You are a processor of life. You must not turn the controls of your life over to somebody else in the form of approval seeking and telling yourself that you have to have it. Now remind yourself, being approved of is wonderful. We all like it. It's terrific. Applause is great. But it is not something I need, and I expect the opposite quite often. And when I do expect it, then I'm not surprised by it. And I'm not looking for any landslide. And even if I want a landslide, I'm still only going to get 53 or 54% of the people to approve of me. And the other 47 or 46% are not going to. And that is just the way things are. And the person who is free from erroneous zones is someone who knows how to accept things as they are. The next, what I call erroneous zone, or error in thinking or in processing your life, is being attached to the past. You must learn how to free yourself from the past. Now, I'm not saying that you should ignore all your traditions and you should ignore your past. I'm saying that being trapped by it today on what you think is something that you had to have in the past and no longer works for you is something that you can get rid of. Again, this is a way of processing. This is a way of thinking. It is thought that we're working on here. It isn't a list of techniques to go out and practice doing these things. It is new ways of thinking, new ways of processing, because your life is really how you think about it. As you think, so shall you be, are the most important words, I think, ever written. In the 7 simple words, as you think, so shall you be. Your thoughts are what create your life. One of the traps that really immobilizes people is what I call the I'ms. Attaching themselves to the past with these self-definitions, these labels that we place on ourselves, and we begin to believe the label. The great Danish theologian Soren Kierkegaard once said that once you label me, you negate me. And you have to remember that that a label is always something once removed from the actual process. Like you can't drink the word water, and you can't get wet from the formula H2O, and there's 1,110 different names for water on our planet. Some call it aqua, some call it ap. In Farsi, it's called ap. And there's Wasser, and you name it. And in 1,110 different dialects and so on, there's all these words. And yet that label is not what it is. The only way you can know water is to experience it, to get in it, to drink it, to be involved in it, and there's the experience of it. And the same thing is true with these I'ms. When you put a label on yourself like, I'm no good at math, or I'm lousy at spelling, or I'm deficient at languages or whatever, you've just put, I'm a slow learner. You've put a label on yourself. Now, that isn't who you are. Who you are is how you think. What you think about is what expands in the world, and you are what you think about all day long. It is your thoughts that create your very life, and all of these definitions that you place on yourself are just things that keep you from being able to go out and do something about improving the quality of your life. Like if you put I call it the I'm circle. If you say something like, I'm shy, I've always been that way. That's my nature. It's just the kind of person I am. I can't help it. I've always been that way. And you hear these sentences over and over and over again. If you believe that, if that becomes who you are, if that label becomes your reality, then you're acting on that the way of processing who you are. And if you say to yourself, I'm shy, and then you see yourself at a gathering, a social gathering, and you see a group of attractive people, then you'd like to go over and talk to them, and you say, I think I'll go over and talk to those people. You say, and then you start over there, and you're on your way over, and then you say, oh, wait, I can't do that. Why not? Well, because I'm shy. And there you go into this trap. You get yourself into this circle of neurosis in which you can never escape because you are living by the label. As soon as you put the label on yourself, you are no longer willing to do what it takes to overcome this thing that you have imposed upon yourself. You're not born with shy genes. It isn't something that anybody imposes on you or injects you with. It is a choice. You may not know any other choice, but it is still something that you have elected to do. And until you rid yourself of the label that you may have been carrying around all of your life, and then we begin to practice new ways of being. And what you do is instead of saying, I'm shy, you say, up until this moment, I've always elected shy behaviors. But today, in this moment, I am going to elect a non-shy behavior. I'm going to try something different. I'm not going to live by the label that I've imposed on myself. And these labels can include things like I'm not good at sports, I'm clumsy, I've never been able to do things. And you see people who say, I'm clumsy or I'm not good at sports, and then you say to them, well, come on, let's go out and shoot some baskets. I say, oh, that'd be great. And then halfway out, they say, oh, no, I can't do that. And I go, well, why not? Well, I'm just no good at that sort of thing. And as if you get good at that by putting a label on yourself and then sitting on the couch and becoming a couch potato. You get good at anything by ridding yourself first of the label and processing yourself in a new way. And that new way is to say, I can do anything. I can become anything I want. I have always believed that about myself and my life. A lot of people say, well, if you're a writer, you can't be a good speaker because, you know, a writer is someone who is much more introverted and they keep all their things within them, and a speaker is much more extroverted, and those two don't mesh. But I believe you can excel in those areas. I believe you can be a poet, and you can also be an athlete. And you can be very, very good at athletics and enjoy that as a very much a part of your life. And you can also be very gentle, and you can enjoy flowers, and you can enjoy little children, and you can also enjoy a boxing match, and you can enjoy sweating, and you can enjoy putting on a tuxedo. Your life can be whatever you choose it, but you first have to rid yourself of these self-defeating I'ms. I'm shy, I'm clumsy, I'm unattractive, I'm ugly, I'm big-boned. I love that one. I'm not organized. You know, people just say, they say things like this as if this is why their life is in disarray. I'm just disorganized. Like they inherited disorganized genes. Their genes are all over the place. Their genetics, you know, there's some in the living room, some in the bedroom, some are in California, some are in Florida, some are in Germany, and they're just all disorganized. And I'm a disorganized person. As if that isn't a choice. To be disorganized is to say I make disorganized choices. And you're listening to someone who does that. But and every now and then I'll say to myself, well, I just don't like all of these details, and I hate keeping receipts, and I resent the IRS for making me keep all of these things, and that's just not the kind of person I am. And then I get a hold of myself, and I remind myself, I have chosen to be disorganized. And if I don't want to pay additional taxes, if I don't want to keep receipts, that's fine. I can just give them all of my money, and that's no problem. Or I can make the choice to, and so what I did with that, instead of telling myself constantly that I'm disorganized and resenting it, one day I just decided that I would handle my receipt problem like this. And I took 12 boxes, and I put them in my office and on the floor, and I just labeled them. Postage, printing, utilities, travel, the 12 or 13 categories or whatever it is. And every time I get a receipt, instead of sticking it in something then at the end of the year resenting having to go through it and all that, I just throw it in one of those little boxes. And then I hired somebody to go through those little boxes and put it all together and take care of it for me. So I still don't have to fool myself into believing that this is something that I enjoy doing. Isn't this terrific? I just simply say, in order to be as happy and effective as I can be, this is a solution. This is a way of dealing with that. And you get people saying things like, I'm forgetful. I can never remember anybody's name. It's just somebody introduces me to someone, and then I've forgotten their name in the next moment. Well, that's a choice. That isn't something that happens because you've got some kind of deficiency in your brain or in your memory. It's because you have not paid attention to that kind of thing. And instead of putting a label on yourself of I'm forgetful and that gets in my way, if it does get in your way and you don't like it about yourself, what you want to do is shift that, transfer that to I am going to change that about myself. Then today, the first three people that I'm introduced to, I'm going to repeat their name over and over again in my mind, and I'm going to come up with some kind of an image in my mind so that I will not forget this person's name. And lo and behold, you have shifted an I'm from I'm forgetful to I'm really good at remembering. And you now have a whole new way of processing your life. I love the ones that are things like I'm Italian, or I'm German, or I'm Irish, or I'm Black, or I'm Chinese. And therefore, and whatever the stereotypes that go with these various labels that you put on yourself, these are the things that these are just the things that I do. I mean, I have a short temper, or I'm very sloppy, or I'm very meticulous, or whatever it is, and you hear people saying things like this. I was in a restaurant one time, and the waiter was screaming and hollering and carrying on, and I called him over to, and I said, what are you doing? You're getting yourself all worked up. Your blood pressure's going up. You're going to have a heart attack before you're 50. And he said, guess what? He said, I'm 51 and I had a heart attack 2 years ago and I'm recovering from it. I said, well, what do you do that for? What do you allow yourself to get so upset for? He said, what do you expect from me? I'm Italian. As if being Italian explained. Then he walked away as if that was an explanation for all of that. Like he couldn't do anything about that. Everybody in my family's like that. We're all very this the way and that. Well, you can be any way that you want to be. That's the most important thing that you can learn from this tape and from reading Erroneous Zones. And that is that you can choose the kind of personality you are going to have. It is not something you're stuck with. It's not something that you just have to have, even though you may have never elected anything to the contrary. You can go out. My wife went out and decided that she was going to get good at something athletic, and she had never done anything very much athletic before in her life, and she took up bowling, and she went out, and you should see her now. She's unbelievable. And a year ago, she couldn't even lift the ball. She didn't even know where to put her fingers, and she's putting her thumb in the finger hole and throwing it the wrong way and dropping. And now she goes out there, and she's unbelievable. She made the choice. She got rid of the self-definition, I'm not good at athletics. And I've seen people do this in many, many areas of their life. I've heard people say over and over again, I'm no good at drawing. I'm not artistic, or I'm not musical. And then they stay away from that for their entire life. And that's what I'm saying. You have to break free from the attachment to the past. You may have been in a music class, as I was. I was in the sixth grade, and my music teacher's name was Mrs. Slyman. I still remember it. And the whole class had to sing, and she said to me, Wayne, when we get to the part where everybody sings, you just mouth the words because we don't want to hear your voice. It's that bad. And since that time, I mean, that was in the sixth grade. We're talking 40 years ago. I'm still hanging on in some ways to that belief that I'm not very musical. And the way that I've challenged that in recent years is when I'll be speaking in front of thousands of people, I will break out into song. I will sing to them. I was on the Dinah Shore show. And she asked me, I told her that story, and she asked me, she said, come on out and sing. And I went out and sang this Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And when I finished the whole thing, she said, Wayne, you are the most positive person I've ever met, and you positively cannot sing. But it didn't matter. The fact is that I wasn't looking for anybody else's approval, any of that. What I'm saying to you is that if you hang on to that, if you're attached to the belief that you can't do something because you've always been told that, or because you're just like your father, or you inherited that from your mother. You hear family saying this over and over again. Oh, he got that from his grandfather, and oh, he got this from his great-grandmother, and all of that. That's nonsense. You are what you choose to be, not what you inherit. And you've got to know in your soul that you have the capacity to be anything that you want, that you are a purposeful, divine creature, and that you can create anything you want for yourself in your life. And the first thing you have to do is get rid of all of those self-defeating I'ms. I'm old. I'm tired. I can't help it. I always tell people, look, don't let an old person move into your body. It's your body. You can do anything you want with it. And if you start walking slow, and if you start stooping yourself over, and you start minimizing your energy levels, and sitting around a lot, and feeling sorry for yourself, and watching the world go by, before long, you're going to be immobilized throughout your entire life. Don't let that old person move in. Keep yourself young and vibrant, not youthful necessarily. I mean, be grateful for whatever age that you are, but don't take on those habits that are going to keep you from being able to do anything you want. There's no age out there. I mean, I watched Norman Vincent Peale get up in front of an audience, and he's in his mid-90s, and he's got more energy than some people I know in their 20s and 30s. And it's an attitude. It's a belief. This is a man who was one of the pioneers of the positive thinking movement, and his whole life has been a testament to that. And I've seen it over and over again, and I also see people who are exactly the opposite. You don't have to be tiredness is a choice. Fatigue is a choice. You don't get tired when you have something pleasant to do. Your life is working when you're inspired. And being inspired means to think inspirational thoughts about yourself.